Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Beats. Glad to be with you this week as we are kicking off a new week here on Faith and Family. Great topic this week. What is the value of a movie? Can movies be redeemed? Are they useful for families and for family time, for children, for teens, for college students? We're going to talk about that this week and talk about a variety of movies that you can watch with your family, or maybe you shouldn't watch with your family. We'll talk about all those things this week and looking forward to getting into a variety of movies as we kick off with a fun one today. If you'd like to join the conversation today, you can do so by calling us at 314-821-0850 or 1-800-730-2727, or you can send an email to family@kfuo.org. We'd like to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for making sure that this program is available here on the air on AM 850 in St. Louis and online streaming live, as well as archived online. So you can go back and listen to the shows over and over and over again. After today's topic, you'll probably want to do that. We're going to have a great conversation and not just have some fun, but also learn something, learn quite a bit along the way as we're talking with our guest, Dr. Michael Eschelbach. Welcome, Dr. Eschelbach from Concordia University, Chicago.
Hi, nice to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us today. And tell us a little bit about what you teach in the theology department and other departments at Concordia, correct?
Yes, I teach New Testament studies primarily, but also world religions, sometimes the philosophy of religion, sometimes Greek, and related courses in the Bible.
So you cover quite a bit. And then outside of the classroom, you have an interesting program called Cinema Sophia. Tell us a little bit about that.
All right. Well, 13 years ago when I first came to Concordia, Chicago, I was a pretty avid movie watcher, and mostly because I recognized sort of the parabolic nature of movies, and that's also one of the electives I teach is on the parables. And so remembering that all of God's creation was designed to bear witness to Him and to teach us about our lives, it's not surprising that anything in our creation and depictions of that in movies would also either bear witness to the truth or sort of expose the problems and consequences of lies. So I started watching films about once a month, inviting students to come and watch them with me and then talking about them, and that sort of continued ever since, more or less.
So movies are more than just fun, is what you're saying.
Well, they are just fun and entertainment for lots of people, but I think they sure have a lot more to offer than just entertainment, and especially if you are engaged in like healing ministries, especially ones that deal with counseling and people's mental and spiritual well-being. You know, you can sit at a movie, and I often do this. I say to myself, oh my gosh, I can't believe how much work this movie's going to make for me. Or I think, hey, this movie's going to help the cause a little bit here. It's teaching something helpful.
Having studied theater and communications as well, there are times when I can't go to either a theater production or a movie and sit and watch it without thinking through it critically and critiquing it. So right. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
So you've covered a variety of movies with Cinema Sophia. As I was looking through the list and the movies you've talked with, obviously your college students about. What are some of the films that you've covered? I know we've chosen for today. We've chosen Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and looking forward to getting into that here in just a little bit. But what are some of the other movies that you've looked at as well?
Well, pretty much a variety of what is offered out there, with one exception. I don't do thrillers or horror, that sort of offering, because I don't see that it has anything useful to offer, especially in contrast with the damage it does, you know, in the imagery it presents. But other than that, we do everything from romance or drama to action adventure, children's movies, or what's considered children movies. We do old movies and classics, even silent movies we have looked at, and then sort of the new releases as well. And we sort of go back and forth. I'm almost always willing to look at a movie that the students are interested in studying together, even when I'd rather not, like the the second last Batman movie I watched sort of by accident with students because I thought it was a different one, and it was the one with the Joker, that fellow that took his or died, the actor, I can't think of his name. Anyway, he was just such a terrible, sinister, mentally deranged person. I don't think it's good to watch that or even know that kind of thinking goes on. But other than that, also we watched some movies that wouldn't be a surprise, like the first and the third Raiders of the Lost Ark, mm-hmm. because they're looking for the Ark or they're looking for the Holy Grail. But also it's kind of fun sometimes to take a movie that a person would think is a stretch. Like, I don't see how that has anything to do with Christ or Christianity or the church or anything that matters, and look at it and say, well, no, there are parallels there, either positive or negative.
Out of all the movies you've watched and reviewed and discussed, which ones have some of the clearest parallels?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I have a, I mean, I was tempted to, I saw that question coming out, oh my gosh, that's a lot of movies I could say something about. But then I remembered, actually, I'd have to say always The Matrix.
The Matrix.
Yeah, and I know that's really dated now. In fact, I think some of my students were just barely born when that came out. But I used to do studies on that all the time with all kinds of different groups, and that's probably the longest study and study guide that I have available on our website. But that movie so clearly, in fact, you can take it line by line and see the parallels between it and the reality of our life in our world, especially with that dichotomy between a person's life in the Matrix and their real life that is enduring as a parallel to our physical life in this physical world in time, in contrast to our spiritual life, our soul in eternity.
So there certainly are a lot of parallels in movies, just depending on it, I guess how we sit down and look at them and discuss them. Why did you choose Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, a book turned movie twice?
Yeah, that's there's a lot of reasons for that. In I looked at a couple of choices too. There are some other really, really good children's films out in recent time. But I thought I'd like to do Charlie and the Chocolate Factory for a couple of reasons. One is because of the author, Roald Dahl, and I'm pretty sure we own everything he's ever written in our house and have read it lots of times, and I've even read his biography. And he just has a gift for creating a story that is fun to read but also has great messages, ideas, lessons for us to learn. Another reason I chose this is because it's been remade, and I often do this with students too, is when a movie's remade, we'll watch the original and then we'll watch the remake and talk in part about why they changed what they did. I chose this in part because of Johnny Depp, who is a very interesting character. And when you look, in fact, I ran a series of movies one year that were all Johnny Depp to ask the students to think about the kind of film that he tends to make, like Edward Scissorhands or Finding Neverland. He seems to be interested, at least, in making movies that ask a person to return to some of the fundamental ideas of what life is about, like the concern and interest for others, for children, that sort of thing. But then on the whole, especially in contrast to the children today and children's books and themes, there tends to be this just steady diet of princess for the girls or superhero for the boys. And I'm noticing, I think, an effect of that is that all these little girls, as they grow up then, think that everyone should treat them like a princess and they should behave like a princess, and not in the altruistic sense, but kind of in the selfish sense. And that all boys think they're a superhero because they wear a shirt or because they want to be. And this movie is very different because, of course, the hero of the movie and the main character, Charlie, is poor, and his family's poor, and the climax of the movie is not about him being rich, really. It's about him sort of realizing or stepping into the work of his mentor or Willy Wonka that isn't about being rich either. It's about doing something extraordinary for people. Even if it's candy, it's still extraordinary.
So when you meet with the students, how do you go about beginning a discussion on the topic? For example, with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, where would you begin?
Yeah, I actually anticipated that question, I think, because I pulled up the study guide I have on it so I could remember how to answer your question. I think it's on my website. If it's not, I'm happy to send it to people who email me. I did work up sort of a set of generic questions because a lot of DCE students or former students that become pastors write me back and say, hey, I want to watch a movie with the students. What kinds of questions should I ask? So sort of the general questions that we'd always ask are simple. For example, what is the movie really about? What's the main point of the movie? What are the sub-themes of the movie? We usually look one by one at the main characters and begin to think about parallels between them and biblical characters. So with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, I actually started with the question about, does the movie intend to show a contrast between the wealth of other children and the poverty of Charlie? Because that is really on the face of things as you get started. And then the question about the overall intent of the film, and then there's a question about child raising and justice. So, there's a very clear contrast that Roald Dahl had in mind between several different children, each of whom had overly indulgent parents and more funds than sense. And then Charlie, who had next to nothing, physically speaking, but he had his family, and you get a chance to see the real wealth that provided for him. And then you sort of work your way through the movie looking at some of the highlights of it, some different moments, especially with the remake. That's a really fun topic to talk about, the squirrels, how they're doing the work and how they know a bad nut when they see one. And that's part of that the theme of justice or equity in the film, that maybe you can get away with living the way you are in a human society, but nature doesn't play favorites. It can't be, duped, and so it knows what it's doing. or the stealing of things, or doing what you're told not to and suffering the consequences of that. And then I came to a couple of questions. One is about how Willy Wonka parallels Jesus, and then about how his chocolate factory parallels the church.
Interesting. So how does Willy Wonka parallel Jesus and the factory parallel the church?
And I know some people might go, oh my gosh, I hope not, because whether it's Gene Wilder or Johnny Depp with his funny glasses and haircut and outfit, I don't think so. Really.
The phone lines are going to light up here in a minute.
Right. I'm looking through my list here. First point, he is a genius, and he does things which anyone would consider impossible. And in fact, I think, an adult watching the movie would say, I don't really understand how he can do the things he did. Where does he get the money from for the factory and how to design it? And you can't do stuff like this inside a factory. It's just not possible. To have an elevator that goes in every direction.
A Wonka-vator.
Yeah, the Wonka. And I think Star Trek tried to do that, but they actually had to make it mechanical somehow. But this one just goes where you want it to. So doing the impossible, that's an important theme. He puts out faithless workers and finds the faithful, very much like the parable of the vineyard and in fact what's happening over time in God's creation. So, faithless workers were trying to steal and undermine what was going on there. They weren't you know, they were there in body but not in soul. And it's interesting how he goes to find the workers that will be faithful, sort of an oppressed, vulnerable lot in a fallen world, and he brings them by as a way of saving them, you know. And he doesn't bring them to a place where they lay around. He brings them to work, but the work is good, and they love their work and they enjoy it, and so no one's taking advantage of anyone there. His utter disinterest in what others think is important, especially when it comes to human nature and bad children. So he's just not affected by or interested in any of the sort of currents and forces that are at work in a human society. He's pensive and soft-spoken and pleasant, even in the face of difficulties. And you never really catch him off guard.
What about the fact that he's just awkward?
Well, I think maybe that's important that he's awkward, at least, you know, from our perspective. I was just reading Isaiah this morning, you know, and I got to the part about that prophesies Jesus having no form or comeliness or beauty. There's nothing about him that would attract people to him in a physical, human sort of a way, and I think that's an important point to ponder, that Jesus, both by way of his teaching or a lot of his teaching or in person, isn't going to be attractive by the world's standards. But then when you contrast that with what is attractive by the world's standards, you say, well, I don't really see where that's going anywhere. It's kind of, you know, and there's been a lot of experience in that lately with athletes sort of disappointing the public. Aren't Lance Armstrong, and there have been other baseball players, you say, wow, the beautiful people aren't so beautiful when you take a closer look, and are really not only disappointing but destructive of people who were hoping to model themselves after such people. And I think, you know, I hate to use the word weird, but different people who aren't so common are often, though, more approachable. You know, you say, well, I mean, you can get near this person, and I don't have to feel like they're beyond me or too good for me.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little quirky like I'm quirky, so maybe that's okay.
What kind of, would you watch Charlie and the Chocolate Factory or Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory? With what age children would you consider watching this, and what kind of discussions could it lead to?
Yeah. Well, these two movies, the make and the remake, they remind me a little bit of Rocky and Bullwinkle, where you can watch them with virtually any age person, because what's on the face of it, what's easily, readily viewable, and what you can hear going on, is sort of oriented to the age and the thought process of the person. So I know little kids, and I've watched this when my children were small. You know, they're just thinking chocolate and candy and color and funny little Oompa Loompa people, and you know, and the music and the songs are interesting to them. But as you grow older, of course, your consciousness is working at a different level, and so you begin to tune into different things and identify with different things. Even to, you know, older people can, of course, they're going to identify with the grandparents and maybe do some thinking about how they interact with their children and grandchildren.
Mm-hmm. I remember when I was younger, kind of being frightened by the movie, by the older one, the one with Gene Wilder from 1971.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a little creepy.
Yeah.
Same is true. I saw the remake with Johnny Depp, and even that was a little creepy as an adult.
Yeah. And that reminds me of The Wizard of Oz, which is probably, you know, centuries, well, it's a decade earlier. Sort of a thing where, depending what age you are, where you got different things out of it. And in that case, I remember, of course, the bats, the monkey bats or whatever they were, but totally freaked me out, and I didn't want to see that movie for a long, long time after I saw it the first time. But in another way, you know, I mean, I know Gene Wilder did get angry, or at least he raised his voice and displayed, you know, some pretty quick and sharp responses to children at times, and I think that was an interesting change with Johnny Depp. But at the same time, there's some reality in that. You know, I think about children who like to play rough with a dog, or you know, mm-hmm. they're not careful about being kind to animals, and the animals let them know after a while that this isn't good. And so a child would say, I mean, my son had that experience, said, oh, I'm a little bit nervous around dogs because this one snapped at me once. And I said, you know what, there's a lot of things in life that are worth being a little nervous about because they're not going to put up with you. So even my own grandfather, you know, I was scared of that guy for a long time, not because he got angry or yelled, but because he didn't. And I just wasn't sure what to make of this guy until I was a little older. So I think that can be a healthy thing. And if children, you know, I think children will talk about that readily. You know, my children would say, oh, that scared me when this part happened. And you know, you can talk about that.
Sure. In the 1971 film with Gene Wilder, I think the Willy Wonka character really doesn't get loud or very outwardly angry with most of the children until the very end with Charlie.
Right.
Up until that point, he seems to respond in kind of a witty way,
mm-hmm.
with each of the characters as they act entitled.
Right.
He
does beat them at their own game, which is another way in which he's like Jesus, in that he is always just. I mean, there is real equity in this, where you've been given lots of chances and the door is continually open for you to respond to graciousness and instruction and to do the right thing, and you just won't do it. So, okay, your choices catch up with you.
And at the end, then, we see him, he becomes very frustrated with Charlie, I guess because it really comes down to, is he, do you think he's testing him there, or he's frustrated? Why do you think that the Willy Wonka character gets so angry with Charlie at the end?
Yeah, I think that's a very important test, a really indispensable test. And I think that there are parallels to that in the scriptures too. Of course, in the history of redemption, this is where Jesus, you know, is the one who passes all the tests. And to remember that, you know, while God tested Abraham, asking him or commanding him to sacrifice Isaac, but knowing all along that he wouldn't require the death of Isaac, but then actually requiring the sacrifice of his own son, and the, you know, the fury and violence that was meted out against Christ by way of the religious rulers who, you know, the mockings and the beatings and the Romans and the soldiers beating him and the crucifixion itself, you really do get to think two things. One is, my goodness, what would our lives be like if God had not executed justice against his own son instead of against us? And then secondly, knowing that he has done that, even when the world seems, or when my experiences seem very violent or angry or judgmental, this is still under God's control. This is still well within his wisdom and is working for us, and he knows just how that's going to work for us. And I think that was, at least in my memory, that was particularly effective in the Gene Wilder version, when he gets so angry and short with Charlie. And you know, this is what Charlie's character endures, you know, where he's going to do the right thing, even though he thinks there's something unfair about this.
You're listening to Family Movie Week on Faith and Family this week as we're discussing Charlie and the Chocolate Factory with Dr. Michael Eschelbach from Concordia University, Chicago. Stick around, more with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory on Faith and Family here on Worldwide KFUO.
You from smoking and brightens your smile, but it's repulsive, revolting, and wrong. Chewing and chewing all day long. The way that a cow does. Oompa, loompa, oompa-dee-da. Given good manners, you will go far. You will live in happiness too.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Aaron and Josh were homeless because of the recession and living in their car when Aaron became pregnant with their third baby. They already had a 2-year-old and a 1-year-old. Planned Parenthood would call it cruel not to abort the third baby, but Aaron rejected abortion, and little Penelope's first home was a homeless shelter. With much work and determination, Aaron got a job at a convenience store and Josh as a cook. They work opposite shifts to avoid child care and share one vehicle. Their next goal is to find permanent and affordable housing. I wish I could tell you what God's plan is for Penelope, but we must accept that on faith. Faith that God has a plan for every child he allows to be brought into the world, even if they are homeless.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
In 1939, Lutherans started resettling people displaced by World War II. In 1960, we asked, who else can we help, and opened our service networks to refugees and migrants. As wars and conflicts create the need for asylum and refuge, Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service is still asking, who else can we help? Today, with partners, congregations, and volunteers, we're resettling refugees, reuniting families, and rekindling dreams. You can help. LIRS.org/volunteer.
You used to change my diapers.
Take care of me 24 hours a day.
Send me to school. Mom.
Dad, I need you.
There's all these things I'm feeling that I've never felt before.
I need to know about having a boyfriend.
I need you to set limits.
I need you to tell me where you stand.
Help me make the right choices.
Mom, Dad, talk with me. You always say I can talk to you about anything.
A message from the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services.
On the next Focus on the Family, technology is all around us, and it does help us stay in tune with the rest of the world. But when does it get to be too much? Doctors Arch Hart and Sylvia Hartfried join us to discuss how digital devices are rewiring our brains and what you can do to get control. Next time on Focus on the Family with Jim Daly.
Weekdays at 9:30 on KFUO.
Pope Francis says he's been disturbed by terrible images of atrocities in Syria. He spoke Sunday about it at the Vatican.
È preoccupazione continuo a seguire la situazione in Siria.
He's called on the international community to help end the civil war that has claimed 100,000 lives. Some U.S. churches are amending their bylaws out of concerns they could face lawsuits from gay couples seeking to hold wedding ceremonies, but Gay Christian Network Executive Director Justin Lee says churches are within their rights to restrict weddings and that any litigation wouldn't be successful.
I don't think that there is any danger for churches because of the freedom of religion.
A Christian legal advocacy group says it's going to federal court to challenge a New Jersey law that bans the use of gay conversion therapy with minors. Matthew Staver, the Liberty Council, says the law, signed last week by Governor Chris Christie, violates the rights of therapists.
That's the worst kind of First Amendment violation that you can imagine.
I'm Norman Hall.
Well, Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Glad to be with you today as we are discussing our family movie for today, for Family Movie Week. We're talking about Charlie and the Chocolate Factory with Dr. Michael Eschelbach of Concordia University Chicago. And before we went to break, we were talking just about some of the characters in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and the things that that can lead to good conversations. Dr. Eschelbach, what role does imagination play in this movie? We talked a little bit about how Willy Wonka can parallel Jesus. He isn't Jesus, and that's not who we understand Jesus to be, but it certainly parallels Jesus, and the chocolate factory can parallel the church and can lead to good conversations about that. Imagination really seems to be a theme throughout the movie, as one of the songs even says. What role does imagination play in is there a parallel, or what does it mean for us?
Yeah, that's a great question, too, and to start with, maybe that's another contrast between the other children and Charlie, where affluent children or children with indulgent parents really didn't exercise their imagination. They just pursued a trail that the world laid down for them, whether it was, you know, TV and video games, or whether it was overeating, or whether it was vanity and materialism. And so when you have Charlie and his family, that's really all there is for you is the imagination, and yet that is a powerful, a tremendous gift that God gives us, especially when we remember Jesus says, unless you repent and become as a child, you can't enter the kingdom of heaven. And a lot of students ask me from time to time, what is heaven going to be like? And interesting how little the Bible says about it. And I think that's for two reasons. One is in a positive way, I think that God would say, well, what would you like it to be like? You know, what would you think heaven would be like? You know, the sky's the limit in terms of what is good and wonderful and extraordinary. And so use your imagination and let that be an encouragement to you. And on the other hand, I think because of our fallen human nature, I'm sure if God gave us a lot of information about heaven, we'd sort of think, well, maybe that doesn't really appeal to me. We'd sit in judgment over it rather than be grateful and take an interest in it. For kids to exercise their imagination, I know I talk sometimes with the art department and that faculty, and it's a very wonderful thing to watch children do art before they've had any art instruction, before anyone said, well, you know, you shouldn't make lines like that, or this doesn't look like it's supposed to look. Just let them, you know, express themselves as their imagination directs them. I remember as a kid, and I did this with my own, and I think it's still attractive, getting a refrigerator box. You know, it's almost unbelievable what goes on, you know, when you put a big box in the company of a child or some children, and it just goes...
The possibilities are infinite.
It's endless hours and hours and hours of making up things with an empty box. And that always... I think that's comical at Christmas time, where we're all worried about what goes into the package, where you know, after all the packages are open and the toys are out, you find the kids playing with the box.
That's exactly what my parents said one year when I and my sister and my cousins were all young. They said, next year we're just going to wrap up some empty boxes because you like the boxes so much.
Exactly right.
And so imagination is a good gift, and And you definitely see that at play in both of these movies. You see some crazy imagination. Where do they come up with these things?
Yeah. Well, and yet, imagination, I think at least positive imagination. You know, there is the fall and there is wickedness. And if you've ever noticed in film, when we're thinking about things that are evil or wicked or horrible, there's never any end to that. Things could just get more and more horrible. And I think even in the Star Wars movies and sci-fi subsequently, you ask yourself in the end, like, come on. I mean, how weird can you make a creature look and hideous? They're not beautiful ever. And when Hollywood needs to try and do something beautiful. Did you notice they can't invent it? They have to use something from nature. They use beautiful scenery from nature, and like go back to Star Wars for a moment. I think they could have done better, no offense, but they used Carrie Fisher. Okay, here's beauty in the form of this princess. And so I think when it comes to imagination in the positive sense, you know, people, children, they look at the world around them, at nature around them, and they sort of build on that. So, you know, colors, all of the colors, you know, are generated from the three primaries. There's a lesson in that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Natural things are sweet and interesting. I mean, look at fruit. And so when you begin to look at what's going on inside of Charlie's factory and the kinds of things he produces, that's all extensions of sort of doing king size what is available to us all the time. And maybe we wouldn't notice that, you know. I was just talking with another colleague of mine at Concordia who was studying a certain artist from, I think, from the 1500s, who said the purpose of art is to make certain things king size because otherwise we'll miss them. Like, so an artist says, paints a painting, you know, and certain things stand out, and the point is for the viewer to say, hey, I never noticed that before, and now when I live the rest of my life, I look around, I notice those things I didn't see before.
So art is a form of highlighting or bringing to our attention some things that are beauty that might not have been noticed before.
Right. You know, and the fact that, I mean, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is grounded in something very real to us, in appetite and in food. I know the Food Network's big now because people, it's real, you know, and the mm-hmm. things that look really good, it's fun to think that they're within my grasp. And so, I mean, there's a lot of good conversation that can happen in a family after watching Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, but also a lot of fun, you know, sort of in the kitchen experimenting, you know, so you can say to the children, hey, let's go in the kitchen and get out the things that we have and let's dream a little bit, you know, what kinds of things could we make? And I remember years, I think it was in 95 or 6, there was a Dr. Seuss birthday. And my children were little then, and I remember making them green eggs for breakfast and ham. And I was curious because once I made the eggs green, I lost my appetite. but the kids thought it was great. You know, or on Valentine's Day, we used to make pink heart-shaped pancakes. You know, there's mm-hmm. it's just and doing things that are real. I mean, we depend on nutrition and eating and doing with your children. But boy, there's a lot of life to be had there, and to this day, my children still gravitate in that direction. You know, when we get together, let's cook something, or let's get a big old box and, you know, play in it.
Try to make some everlasting gobstoppers.
yeah, or you know the one candy that in the Gene Wilder movie, at least I remember it, that had the whole Thanksgiving dinner in it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Thanksgiving dinner's a big deal.
Sure. That was the one that Violet ate. It was the gum. That's what it was. It was gum.
Gum, right.
Well, we're discussing movies on Family Movie Week here on Faith and Family. If you'd like to join the conversation, if you have a question for Dr. Michael Eschelbach from Concordia University Chicago, you can do so. Give us a call here in the studio at 314-821-0850 or outside of the St. Louis area, 1-800-730-2727. Or you can email us your questions. Send an email to family@kfuo.org. And so if you... What role do the Oompa Loompas play? They're the mysterious characters that are in the background, and in both movies they play this. They're very mysterious. They're kind of almost elusive in some scenes. What role do the Oompa Loompas play?
Yeah, well, it'd be fun to say they were the clergy, wouldn't it? but I do think that they are very much the children of the kingdom. First, because they've been redeemed, so to speak, by Willy, just like Christians, because they work, you know, it's not really in their father's house, but they do work in their Redeemer's kingdom, and they do so cheerfully, but they also do so wisely. And that, I think that's the mysterious part of it, where the people from the outside are never really going to get them, and they're going to look funny to them. And they're even, I think the size is important. They're going to look small. You know, Paul has that place in one of his epistles where he talks about how the world views the apostles, you know, and even he gets to the point where they see us as the off-scouring or the rubbish of the world. And I think it's important for Christians to remember that our work is a sort of a steady, quiet, usually invisible, not glorious by world standards, but an effective work. You know, always those Oompa Loompas, they just keep cranking out the candy, and they know it's meaningful to the world outside of them, and they sing, and, you know, Christians historically and today still continue to sing and rejoice in the work they're given to do, and frown on and are discouraged by, even disgusted by, you know, wickedness, and so there we are.
In the newer movie, they all look the same. They all look, identical. They all look like, you know, twins.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was a budget thing, actually. Right, you just get a couple of them and then you multiply them digitally. But that's important when you think about, if the Word of God is what regenerates us as children of God, you know, while on the outside we do all have our different forms and shapes and looks and interests, but for that which is fundamental about us in a Christian soul, because what life is made of is fundamentally the same, so what we're made of is fundamentally the same, you know, and when we think about or talk about ourselves as brothers and sisters in Christ, it's not just a sentiment or a euphemism, it's a fact, and we're identical twins, you know, so to speak. If the same seed produces us all, then we are identical in that core, you know, and what's in the center of us, which speaks to the idea of fellowship and communion and the bond that we have between one another.
What some movies have morals that, you know, are teach morals. Is there a moral lesson in this movie?
You know, there are several moral lessons, and I think the greatest one on the face of it has to do with honesty, and related to that, a lesson that's so missing in our culture, and that is equity. You cannot beat the equity of the law in God's creation. What I mean by that is, I think a lot of people have the notion of Christianity and God as sort of very cavalier and even vindictive, and God made up rules just because he gets to, because he's God, you know, like an older sibling when the parents are gone, and God, you know, punishes people because he likes to do that, because he can. And I've seen that theme in movies, like when I think about the Avengers and Loki, you know, and he's going to kick people around because he could do it, sort of thing. But that's not how life really is. You know, a universe that sustains life the way ours does and is beautiful and enduring and has so many fantastic qualities depends on the order that God established when he created it. The law, you know, people talk about the laws of nature, and there's homeostasis in nature, just like in human physiology. And so it makes sense, and it matters that when we contradict the laws of nature or God's design in creation as things that make for life, there's no escaping the consequences of that. So a fantastic lesson in Willy Wonka, especially for young children, but adults, you know, we can all learn this lesson, is that nobody gets away with anything in the end. It's, you know, it's not unlike Lazarus and the rich man. That's the point. One of the points of that history, it's not a parable, it's a factual history, that, you know, Abraham says to the rich man, hey, you had your good things in your time, and now you're getting the other side of that equation, just like Lazarus had his bad things, and he's now getting his good things. And it helps, I think, for Christians, especially in our society, when we're the underdogs, you know, we're the Oompa Loompas and we're the Charlies, and we, you know, we belong to the theology of the cross. This is the time when we sacrifice our lives on behalf of others, and that's all right, because there's good. Good always comes from this, you know. Even, you know, Charlie, and this is something else I wanted to talk about in the movie, mm-hmm. is how it came about that the children that got the tickets got the tickets. And it's a fantastic contrast between the other children, you know, who have all of these forces at work getting these tickets for them. And so it's, you know, there's really no question about them getting a ticket, but it won't do them any good. And Charlie, who, you know, you get a chance to see, oh, he's got a chance at this. No, he didn't get a ticket, and you really have given up, and so he's willing to give up, and then, nope, there it was, you know. And Willie knew ahead of time, just like God knows ahead of time, where and when and how he gets things to us. So it really builds hope in a Christian, and that our hope is based on the resurrection of Jesus from the dead, that there is no undermining or missing, you know, or ruining the purpose of God for us in our life to you know, teach us what fullness of life is made of, to help us grow in that and appreciate it and be more effective in sharing the gifts that God has given us with other people.
And I thought it was all about predestination.
It is, but that's another conversation. Now we're back to the Matrix.
Earlier, you mentioned that in some of the movies, when there's a remake, you discuss the differences between the original and the remake. So we go from book to the 1971 movie to the remake. What are the differences, and why do you think there are differences?
Well, there's always differences, you know, Hollywood, of course, has certain restrictions when you're going to make a book into a movie, okay? You can't do everything the way the book does it. And part of that's a budget issue. There's limitations. I think also, you know, Hollywood worries about marketability, and so I think they tend to ignore certain things in a book that they think aren't going to keep the audience's attention,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, play up or make even brighter or bolder other things that they think will keep the audience's attention. Part of it's a technology thing, of course. So from 71 until the remake with Johnny Depp, of course, the technology is, you know, it's almost indescribable, the changes and differences. So they could do certain things a little more interestingly, and, you know, they hyped up the wow factor. But, you know, one of the things that I liked in the remake, and I was hoping we'd get to this, is that Willy Wonka brought not only Charlie's family, but their house into his precinct, just like it was. Didn't fix it. And I think that is fantastic. And it reminds me of the shepherds who visited, you know, Joseph and Mary and the baby in the manger in the stable. And then the text says, and they went back to their fields. So on the surface of it, nothing changed for the shepherds. It was still cold. It's still dark. There's still the sort of oppressive religious system. There's still the oppressive Roman Empire. And yet it says they went rejoicing. So on the surface, nothing changed. Beneath the surface, everything changed. And that's an important lesson for kids, too, that the most important things in your life may not and often do not change your physical circumstances or surroundings. But it capitalizes on it. It recognizes the good of it. Just there's like the hole in the roof, you know. Who wouldn't think, oh, that's a problem. We should fix the hole in the roof. But then you can't see the stars anymore.
That's true. Sometimes the things that we think are problems at the same time are very much so gifts for us.
Absolutely right.
You mentioned wicked earlier being an element in some movies. Where's the wicked in this movie, in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory?
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that makes it child-friendly, I think, is that, you know, we know this generally, is that you don't have to give the imagination much to work with, and it will do the rest. So when we were kids, when I was a kid at least, you know, watching The Lone Ranger, you know, in fact, I just rewatched one a while back, and I was just laughing at how good the bad guys were. You know, they dressed nicely, and they spoke good English, and they were even polite in their own sort of a way, you know. But we thought, oh, those are really bad guys. Those are terrible guys, and we wouldn't want to be like that. Over the years, it's sort of like addictions where you have to keep increasing the dosage, I think, in order to, at least Hollywood thinks it needs to, in order to keep people's attention and keep them coming, make wicked things even more wicked or hideous. And so one of the good features about Willy Wonka is that what's bad or what's evil in the movie isn't, you know, doesn't give you nightmares,
mm-hmm.
But it's there, and you know it's bad. And even when you think to yourself, oh my gosh, what is it like to get sucked up in a tube with chocolate and go through some, you know, chocolate machine, and what happens to this person? Okay, that's enough, you know. Or what happens when a bad nut goes down the garbage chute? In fact, it's even a little scary when all the squirrels, you know, start attacking, so mm-hmm. to speak. But other films in our day, I mean, I just look at new releases at Redbox, because I get those emailed to me every week, and oh my gosh, it's just the cover of the thing, just one glimpse of what this movie is about. Even the title of the movie is horrific. This is the kind of thing that, you know, the health services for the mind spend years trying to get people to recover from. This is the sort of thing, you know, that makes Vietnam veterans still unable to sleep at night, things that they have seen that humans invent and do to each other. And
I think you got it right earlier, though, when you were talking about when Hollywood's making a movie, they've always got to find what's going to appeal to the audience, and with the audience constantly becoming more and more, in a sense, jaded,
right.
you've got to find the next, the scarier thing, the thing that's one step further.
Yeah, right. Now, an interesting antidote to that, I think, and maybe Hollywood will pay attention. It does a little bit.
We got about 1 minute left.
Okay. Yeah, is that I notice adults now, I see, I don't have a smartphone. I like my dumb phone because it's like me, but people that have smartphones, adults, I watch them and I ask them what they're doing, and they're playing Candy Crush. You know, and I contrast that with teenage boys who keep playing more and more graphically violent war movies or war games, and think, you know what, it doesn't have to keep people's attention to be interesting. It can be more comical. It doesn't have to be more sinister.
Right. So we're always going to be bombarded with something that's one step further, but we don't have to be. We don't have to have the smartphone. We don't have to watch that movie. Well, Dr. Eschenbach, I really thank you for your time and for talking us through these movies, both Willy Wonka and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. It was fun to sit down and watch the old one again this weekend. I enjoyed having some time to just sit down and enjoy that movie and relive it and be a little frightened by the scene as they go through the tunnel, but it was all good. So thanks so much for your time, Dr. Eschenbach.
You're welcome. Glad to be helpful.
All right. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Well, we hope you stick around for Family Movie Week right here on Faith and Family as we talk about more great movies for the family and discussions that can come out of those. So stick around. Moments of Assurance up next right here on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.